And welcome back. We are sitting down with Alanka Dunin, if I hopefully pronounce that right, with some of our other shows here.
Daddy Mojo, hello.
Daddy Mojo.
You want to kick it off, sir?
Yeah, sure thing. Miss Alanka, just a question, because what you do is so utterly confusing to me. How would you best describe to the layperson what you do?
I am an amateur historian of classical ciphers.
And a cipher, because we've all seen National Treasure, is basically a riddle, a physical riddle of sorts.
Well, it depends how technical you want to be. There are ciphers, there are cryptograms, there are codes. Technically, a cipher is a system that is used to encrypt something. Usually, like if you were to take the Caesar cipher, you would take all the letters in the alphabet and shift them by three. So an A becomes a C, a B becomes a D, a C becomes an E, and so forth. So that's a system where you can take any text that you want to encrypt, and you can use that cipher system, which is different from a code, where you generally need a code book. And so if you wanted to encrypt the word cat, you would need to look up the word cat. I'm waving my hands in the air here. You would need to look up the word cat and see, aha, the word for cat is turtle. And so anything you wanted to encrypt would have to be in the book in order for you to encrypt it.
So, I guess kind of to back up a little bit anyone who are not familiar with what we're talking about, what is kind of, I guess, the short synopsis of what, you know, cryptology yeah, actually is. Like, when we say that, you know, what are we talking about?
So it comes from the Greek. So cryptos means hidden, and logos means book or study. So the study of things that are hidden. So cryptography, crypto, hidden, and grapheme, like pencil, graphite, means to write. So cryptography means to create a code. Cryptanalyst is someone who studies codes. So technically, I am a cryptologist, but, you know, even with people who are in the field, we're just all cryptographers.
That's a good umbrella for the yeah. creators, the breakers, and the historians
yeah.
of it all.
Yeah.
Well, for the code breaking side, is there, when you first look at a unknown code, is there like, let me check the first couple things. Where do you start when you start trying to decode something that's like an unknown?
Sure. Well, I take a step back and I just look at the whole thing. And I think about who wrote this, why did they write it? Was it written with the intention that it be broken by somebody? Or was somebody just goofing around and just putting down random letters, which happens sometimes? And then in proper usage, a code or a cryptogram or a cipher or anything is written with the intent that it's going to be broken. It's usually something that's used in wartime. So you have a sender who is writing something like, hey, we need to bring in the bomber planes. They need to bomb here right now, right? And it's encrypted and it's sent to bomber command, where they decrypt it and go, aha, we need to send the bombers there right now. And so it needs to be something that can be done fairly quickly in wartime conditions. You know, bombs are going off.
You want the intended recipient to be able to decode it, and everyone along the way to be like, I don't know what this is.
yeah, exactly.
So since we're not in an active state of wartime, what do you mainly decode now or create codes for?
Well, the primary reason today is recreation. So you go to the store and you buy a book on crossword puzzles, and in the back there will be some codes, cryptograms that people are decrypting for fun. Yeah. There are also some famous codes that have never been cracked. So there are, and that's something that's one of my areas of expertise, is famous unsolved codes.
Like that thing you heard.
Yes, when I was reading about you earlier, about cryptos.
Oh,
what,
yeah.
What exactly is that?
Oh,
I've never heard of this before this morning.
Ah, I can tell you all about cryptos.
Its location is why you haven't heard of it much.
It's a sculpture at CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia. It's about 12 feet tall, 20 feet long. It's a big, tall, petrified tree trunk with these sheets of copper that are scrolling out of it, like paper scrolling out of a printer. And there are about 1,700 characters that are carved through it, so you can look through the letters and see the other side of it. And it's a challenge that was created by an artist named Jim Sanborn, and it was a challenge for the employees at the CIA. Right now, we know, so it's been there since about 1990, and we know now that there are four codes on it. Three of the four have been solved. The fourth has not been solved yet, and it's one of the most famous unsolved codes in the world.
So yeah, obviously being a sculpture at the CIA, it's not like anybody can walk up to it. How did you get into studying cryptos?
I had heard, and this is how I got into the public cryptography scene. It was through DragonCon, actually. DragonCon got me into this. So these are, you guys are my peeps here, you know, DragonCon. So I was attending some of the sessions actually at the EFF track, the Electronic Frontiers track. And these were sessions on hacking. And these were the white hat hackers who were coming in and teaching people how to secure their computers so that the bad guys couldn't get in. And at the time, they were handing out flyers with all the other stuff you get at a convention. And one of the flyers was about a convention called Freaknik, spelled P-H-R-E-A-K, Freaknik, a hacker convention in Nashville, Tennessee. And this flyer was a code. It was on a sheet of paper, and it had just a bunch of letters at the top of the paper saying, if you can crack this code, you'll win a free trip to a HackerCon. And the intent had been, when it was created, that it was supposed to be just entertainment for the attendees at Freaknik 3, which had been a year earlier, but no one had cracked it yet. So now they were handing the code out at DragonCon saying, hey, can anyone crack it now? So I picked the flyer up with all the other flyers, you know. Now it's stickers, but at the time then it was flyers. I picked it up with all the other stuff you get at a convention, and then I brought it home with me. I was living in St. Louis at the time, and then there was a weekend later that I was just, I think I was home with the flu or something, and I was really bored. I'm like, okay, I'm going to take a look at the Freaknik 3 code, and I got obsessed with it. I got into the zone. And like my friends would say, hey, do you want to go to a movie? I'm like, don't talk to me unless you want to talk about the code. And it took me 10 days, but I cracked it. And I won a free trip to a HackerCon and free drinks and T-shirts and all that. So not that it's hard to get free drinks at a HackerCon. But so I got to go to Freaknik 4. And in the Freaknik 3 code, it was created sort of like the layers of an onion. So you had to solve one layer and then solve another layer and solve another layer. And there were also dead ends and red herrings. And one of them was, okay, you've gotten this far, now go solve this. And it gave you a URL, which was to the CIA website. And it was, at that time, the CIA website where they had a picture of the sculpture Cryptos. It was like, go solve this now. And so I read about it, and I'm like, oh, ha, ha, you need to go solve Cryptos, one of the most famous unsolved codes in the world. This is a dead end. And then I went back to solving the rest of the Freaknik 3 code. So that's how I first heard about Cryptos. And then a bit later, this was 24, 25 years ago. And so a bit later, September 11th happened. And I was as enraged as everyone else by what had happened. And I actually have a cousin who works in Washington, D.C., and he had a very close call that morning where he was supposed to give a talk at the Pentagon. And sorry, I'm getting a little upset. He was supposed to give a talk at the Pentagon that morning, and he was running late because he was having printer problems. And he finally got the problems figured out, and then he was heading for the Pentagon, and he was checking his cell phone, and his phone messages, phone actually crashed because of all the messages that were on the phone saying, a plane just hit the Pentagon, don't go. And the plane actually hit where he was supposed to be. So some of the people that he was supposed to brief were actually killed that morning. So, we fast forward another few months, and it was, I think it was Thanksgiving, and I flew to Washington, D.C. to see my cousin and hug him. And we went to the memorial. It was a very new memorial. You could still smell smoke and stuff. But we went to the Pentagon. We put a little American flag there. And then we were driving around. And this was my first time in Washington, D.C. And so my cousin, Nick, he was saying, well, this is your first time in D.C. Is there anything else you want to see now that you're here? And I'm like, well, you. And he says, well, that's nice. You know, it's nice to see you, too. But there's kind of a lot of things to see. Anything else you want to see? And I'm like,
it's like, how good is your security clearance or something I want to see?
Yeah, right. Exactly. And I said, you know, I've heard about this sculpture called Kryptos at CIA headquarters. I'd like to go see it. And he said, okay, well, let's see, CIA headquarters, that's in Langley. And so we tried to find it, and we just failed miserably because there's no street address for CIA headquarters. You can't just, and at the time, MapQuest, you couldn't type it into MapQuest and say, take me to CIA. So I wasn't going to let that stop me. So I went looking on... at the time, we didn't have Google Earth, but we had other ways that you could kind of see from above different areas of the city. And I sort of knew what the CIA looked like because I'd seen Tom Clancy movies. Okay. You know, they'd get this thing, CIA, like, yeah. CIA.
That's the real building.
Yeah, exactly. So I got some of these pictures, and I went and I looked for the CIA and found it. And then I had the general... location of it, and then there's these things called Operation Security and ComSec and Communication Security, and people failed miserably because I was Googling, and I would find, like, someone had said, okay, I'm giving directions to my son's soccer match. The way to get there is you drive down the highway, and after the sign to the CIA, you're going to take the next exit. And so, like, okay, here's where we go. So my cousin and I, we went there, look, there's a sign to the CIA. And what we were intending to do, totally naive, what we were intending to do was to go to the CIA and then just, like, see if there was, like, a service road around the outside, and we'd peek over the wall, you know, and see if we could see the crypto sculpture. It doesn't work like that. You get there and you take the exit, and there's big walls with barbed wire across the top and guard shacks with big guys with guns that are pouring out, asking a very reasonable question right after September 11th, yep. Who are you and why are you here? Right, exactly. So,
have a gift shop there.
exactly. So, my cousin and I are like, can we talk our way into CIA? So, we're like saying, oh, we're just here to see Kryptos. And the guards relaxed a little bit and said, sorry, official business only. And we're like, okay, can I get my congressman to send an invite so we can get in? And they said, sorry. You know, official business only. And we're like, is there a public tour day so we can come in and see? And they're like, sorry, official business only. And no matter what we asked, they were like, sorry, official business only. And like I said, these were big guys with guns. And so we finally said, okay, and we drove away. So now there's another part of my life that's going on at the same time of this. By the way, I'm totally over time. Can I keep going here?
I think we still got another five.
Okay. So I'll see if I can condense this a little bit. So there was another part of my life that was happening where I had September 11th. I'm furious as everyone else by September 11th. And I was wondering, could I help with the war on terrorism? So if you think back, nothing we remember personally, but back in World War II, there was this area called Bletchley Park, where people were helping with the war effort and cracking the Enigma ciphers. So if you've seen the movie The Imitation Game, right? And they needed a lot of people. And one of the things they would do is they would put puzzles into the newspaper and say, if you can solve this puzzle, come and join the warfare. This really happened, okay? And I was wondering, like, I've cracked all these codes in the hacker scene, you know, the Freaknik 3 code and this stuff. Maybe I can help with the war on terrorism. So I called up my local FBI, and I said, hey, can I help? And they said, no. So, okay, it's not going to stop me. What can I do? So, and I kept calling back saying, can I help, can I help, can I help? And finally, I got an agent who said, well, what is it that you know about? And I said, oh, well, I know about all these codes, you know, I can do in the Freaknik 3 code. There'd been this thing like UU encoding and steganography and Morse code. And he says, wait, steganography? We've been hearing rumors that Al-Qaeda might have been using steganography as a way of planning the September 11th attacks. Maybe you could use steganography. You could come in and give a talk about steganography to us, because we're here in the St. Louis office. And cryptography is not our mission. That's like the Washington, D.C. thing.
What is steganography?
Aha. So steganography is a way of hiding messages in a way that it's not clear that there is a message. So remember I was talking about cryptography is like hidden and writing. So steganography is writing, but it's writing under a roof, like Stegosaurus is a lizard with a roof, right? So steganography is a way of sending a message that it's not clear that there even is a message.
You know, like the fourth word has the first letter of every fourth word will give a message, kind of like that simple?
It could be. Most commonly, it's something where you're looking at a picture. And inside the bits and bytes of the picture, there is a message that's hidden in the picture. So you could be looking at a picture of a rose, but inside that picture of a rose, you have an entire document that's hidden inside that picture.
How long have you been cracking codes for?
Well, I've been cracking recreational ciphers since I was a kid. Like, I'd buy these crossword puzzle books that would have crossword puzzles at the front and codes at the end, and I would just ignore all the crossword puzzles and just go to the codes at the end and the logic puzzles, because that's what I was interested in. And then it was Dragon Con with the Freaknik 3 code, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna crack this now. And that's when all of a sudden I started getting public attention for having cracked the Freaknik 3 code that no one else had ever cracked. And it was funny because when I got to the center of it, the guy who had written the code had not made any assumption that a woman might be the person who would crack the code. So at the center of the Freaknik 3 code, it said, congratulations, now to announce your win, you need to write a message in haiku or sonnet format about why you like to go swimming with bow-legged women and swim between their legs, which is an old World War I song. Yeah. And I was like, what the? And I wrote a haiku. The guy who had written the code was a guy named Johnny X. That was his handle. And so I wrote a haiku, which, as you know, is 575, right? And I said, Johnny X and I will discuss things aquatic if he wears a suit. And so that was how I announced my win. And it took him a month to respond, but he finally grudgingly did, saying, okay, Ilanka has cracked the code. So, and then that got me all kinds of attention. And then I went around cracking a bunch of other codes in the hacker scene. I actually cracked so many that I was banned from competition. So like at the AtlantaCon hacker convention, when they released their code, it was on a sheet of paper, and at the bottom of the paper it said, note, past puzzle solvers are ineligible for prizes associated with solving the AtlantaCon puzzle. Give someone else a chance, Ilanka.
You get too good at being an amateur, then you got to go professional.
So I cracked that one too.
I think we got to bring this in for a landing. So how can people follow you, find your books, check out all the things that you do?
Sure. I have a personal website, ilanka.com. And for our book here, we have a website, because I wrote this with Klaus Schmeh, who is a big crypto blogger in Germany. And our website is codebreaking-guide.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time. This has been immensely educational. And enjoy the rest of your con. Any final words for you?
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, I'd be happy to keep talking for hours. I will be giving here at Dragon Con later today. I'll be giving a talk on Kryptos and other unsolved codes. And then tomorrow I'll be giving a talk on Crypto 101, which is how to crack codes. And then on Monday, I'm giving a talk about two big codes that have been cracked recently and how they were cracked. And one is the Zodiac Killer ciphers. And the other is the cipher. There were a bunch of letters by Mary, Queen of Scots, that were just discovered and decrypted. And I'm going to talk about how that whole thing happened on Monday.
Sounds awesome.
Cool.